This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here we go, hour number two of the G-Bag Nation on 105.3. The Fan NCAA tournament action underway tonight with a couple of play-in games, two more tomorrow, and then the official dance party underway on Thursday. Joining us now is quite a veteran of the tournament. Final Four in both his freshman and junior seasons. Great career at North Carolina and in the NBA, including winning it all with your Dallas Mavericks in 2011. It's Brendan Haywood here on The Fan. Good afternoon, sir. How the heck are you?
I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you, Brendan. It's good to reminisce perhaps on that run in 2011 because Mavs fans are down bad right now. Do you have any words of encouragement?
I wish I could tell you think times are going to get better, but they're not. It's real tough. It's real tough right now. Obviously, the trade happened, and then the injuries to AD. He only plays a half. Kyrie has the unfortunate ACL tear. You got Gafford goes down. So, man, like right now, man, Mavs fans are down because this started out as a team that everybody thought could possibly compete for a title. And even after the trade, there were still a lot of experts that thought this team could compete for a title, and it just, because of injuries, never materialized.
Do you think it could next year?
It's going to be tough. I mean, Kyrie coming off an ACL the first year. It's going to be tough. I'm not sure if he's going to be ready, when he's going to be ready. These young teams are getting better. Like a team like OKC, if a Jalen Williams has a big time coming out party in the playoffs, that pretty much solidifies OKC for the next 3 to 4 years because now you'll have Shea, his true running mate, and they got so much young talent and draft capital on that team. So I'm not sure where it's going to go right now. I can honestly say that. But I still love my Mavs, and I'm hoping for the best.
Right on. Appreciate your honesty and that great work you put in back there in 2011. Now, what do you think about the controversy around your North Carolina Tar Heels getting in the tournament here with their lack of quad one wins? Do you think they deserve to be in?
Listen, man, at the end of the day, sometimes it's not what you deserve. It's just what you get. And they got in. They got in. Hey, listen, there's a lot of people complaining. It don't matter. They in. The governor of West Virginia is going on TV making press releases. He has to have better use of his time. There has to be more pressing issues in West Virginia. That's just all I'm saying. Yep. Carolina's in. If you watch the way they play down the stretch, they won 8 out of their last 10 games. They've made changes to the starting lineup. since they've made those changes, they've been playing excellent basketball, and I expect them to go out there and win tonight. Hubert Davis gets to use all this negativity as fuel. Take that, put a battery in his team's back, and hopefully that'll lead to a win tonight and a couple of more in the NCAA tournament as they shock the world and shut everybody up.
Hey, Brendan, I was going to ask you this, though. So many of these metrics and stuff measure teams, but the one I kind of find interesting is just the damn eye test. What teams in this tournament fit your eye the best?
All of the number one seeds. This is the greatest group of number one seeds I've ever seen. Most of the time, we have some number one seeds that are flawed. Like, sure, you'll have a team, you'll be like, oh, this is a number one seed, but you'll be like, yeah, they average 90 points, but they can't defend. Or you'll be like, oh, yeah, this is a number one seed, and they can defend, but they can't score. This year, all of the number one seeds they can score the basketball, they have guard play where those guards can boogie, and they can also defend. Like, we're seeing these elite defensive clubs, but the roster is completely built out. They got defensive players as well. Like, you look at Florida, Duke, Houston, Auburn. This is probably the greatest collection of number ones that I've seen. So if you're filling out a bracket, I ain't saying take all the number ones, but don't get too far away from them. Don't be afraid to go with a lot of chalk.
You think this could be Houston's year?
It could be any of them's year. Like I said, Houston definitely has the talent to do so. Like I said, Houston could definitely do it. And then, like I said, I love the fact that they all defend. On nights where Houston can't throw it in the ocean, they can win a game in the 50s. That means something. Because when you're a top-seeded team, you get into a really close game, the whole building turns against you. Mm-hmm. Next thing you know, both teams are playing tight. But you're not going to be tight on defense. You might be tight making shots. That defense travels. On a night where you're only shooting 17% from three, you go out there and you make sure that they don't have a big night from three and you still win that game. Houston possesses that type of power. Kelvin Sampson, incredible basketball coach. They could definitely win it.
It's Brendan Haywood here with you on 105.3 The Fan. Take us back to your time at North Carolina. What sticks out most to you about your Final Four experiences?
Man, just two different Final Four teams. My freshman year, we were kind of favored, one of the better teams all year long. Getting a chance to play with great guys like Antoine Jamison, Vince Carter, Shamon Williams. Like, we really had a lot of talent on that team. I actually really disappointed. I'm still disappointed that team didn't win a championship just because of how good we were. And then my junior year, we were on a team that a lot of people didn't even – we kind of resembled this year's Carolina team. A lot of people didn't think we should have made the tournament. We go on to upset Missouri with Kareem Rush. We go on to knock off Stanford with the Collins twins and Mark Madsen and run past Tennessee, and we go to the Final Four. So that team had a special place in my heart as well because we did what a lot of people thought we couldn't do. I just wish one of those teams would have been able to get a championship. Then I would have had a championship at all three levels, college, pro, and high school.
Brendan, a lot of the focus is, and the kind of a fun story has been what St. John's has been able to do with Rick Pitino. Where do you put Rick Pitino as far as the all-time college coaches?
Right up there with the greats. He's elite. He's won championships. He's somebody that understands the game of basketball. And what I love about Rick Pitino is his style can change.
Sure.
Like, I'll give you an example. And this is no disrespect to this guy, but I'm just using it for an example. Like, Jim Boeheim is a great coach, but he just ran zone for years.
Sure.
Rick Pitino would change his style. Like, hey, I'm at Kentucky. We full court press it. Then you might get a team that we don't got that type of talent. I'm going to pull it back. Hey, I might press you and drop back into a little bit of a zone. You know what I'm saying? I might run as – like, he just understands how to play. He doesn't play to his ideals. He plays to the strength of his team. And I really love that about Rick Pitino. I also love the fact that Rick Pitino isn't one of these old-school coaches complaining about the guys getting paid.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so hard to recruit now. Well, the guys should have been getting paid, okay? Yeah, it's harder now. Listen, put your big boy pants on or get out the way. We've seen a lot of old dogs get out the way. Rick Pitino's like, nah, I understand how the game is played. I'm going to play the NIL game. I'm going to recruit in the transfer portal. I'm going to go do what I got to do, and I'm going to turn St. John a once dead program. But Johnny's been dead for a long time, and I'm going to make him respectable. And I'm going to make him respectable again. So I have nothing but respect for Rick Pitino.
Former Mav, former Tar Heel, Brendan Haywood with us here in the G-Bag Nation. Brendan, how much cursing did you do at your television screen the other night when your guy Jalen Withers had that lane violation at the end of the tournament game?
Man, listen, just know this. If you're a friend of mine and I send you a picture of Withers, that just means I'm telling you to stay in your lane. Stay in your lane, man. Oh, my goodness. And I feel bad because in today's day and age, like, I know he was getting it on Twitter. I know Facebook, Instagram. Yeah. He's getting all types of rude DMs. So I'm not going to say anything negative about that young man. It's a mistake. He knows it was a mistake, and I just hope he learns from it and makes up for it in the NCAA tournament.
Now, Tar Heel biases aside, how incredible is this Cooper Flag?
He's incredible. And the biggest thing about Cooper Flag is not his offense. On a night where Cooper Flag is 3 of 14, you'll look at the stat sheet, you'll be like, well, he has 10 rebounds, 8 assists, 3 blocks, and 4 steals. And he'll go out there and guard the team's best player. Like, he just has versatility defensively too. He'll guard a point guard. He'll switch off, guard a big, guard a small forward, guard a wing. Like, the kid's incredible, man. He just really, really he has a great feel for the game. He's going to be a very good pro. Some people throw around the term generational. I think that's going too far, because generational is something that you really haven't seen before. We've seen 6'8", 6'9" guys with versatility, but Wimby's generational. You know what I'm saying? Like, LeBron's generational. Kevin Durant was generational. I think Cooper Flagg is incredible. And I think that he's going to be a really, really good pro. And listen, because of him and how well Duke defends, I think they have a good chance to win the NCAA tournament this year.
We're talking hoop here with Brendan Haywood with you on 105.3 The Fan. Okay, speaking of friends, Jesse Holly, who was there at UNC right after you, he texted in to say that he's glad we've classed up the program by having a Tar Heel on the show.
Hey, Holly's my guy, man. He has one of the best personalities you ever gonna find, man. Holly's an incredible guy.
Yeah, and I believe he was a high school champion as well. I guess you guys had a pretty good squad in high school, though.
Yeah, I mean, we had me and another guy, Vincent Witt. He ended up going to Clemson. I had a pretty good squad in high school. I think the year we won the state championship, we ended up ranked like top 15 nationally, and that means a lot for a public school.
Hey, is Michael Jordan cool to all you guys, or is he a bully like he came off like maybe in that Last Dance and some of the stories on how he can be?
Michael Jordan is Michael Jordan. He's not a bully. He's not just going to be running around here shaking hands and kissing babies. If he walks into the room, he wants to compete, whether it's gambling, shooting competitions, joking around. But he's pretty much been a great guy to all the Carolina guys. When he came back and played pickup, he wasn't trying to bully us. He was just out there playing. He was killing too, killing. Oh my goodness! the day Mike came back, showed me who Mike really was, because at that point, Jerry Stackhouse really used to, like, dominate the pickup at UNC. He was playing for, I think, like, the 76ers at the time. And he used to just come back, and Stack was the man. And Mike just came back, took over the pickup games. I think his team lost, like, the first one, and then he never lost for the rest of the day. And he was talking to Jerry. He was getting the better of him. We weren't used to seeing nobody talk to Jerry. But, you know, you talk to Stack, man, he might put the balls on you. So we weren't used to seeing that. And he just killed the whole day. And I remember after his team won like 8 games in a row, I was like, man, he wasn't playing basketball at that point. I said, man, how long have you been training, man? Are you coming back or something? He said, no, man, I ain't touched the basketball in 2 years. So that's what I knew Mike was, that guy, man.
Was that before he went to the Wizards, came back to the Wizards, or was that after?
No. This was before. Okay. So, like, this is like when he retired, like, in that span before the Wizards. Mm-hmm. Like, he hadn't picked up a basketball in 2 years, happened to just figure he's going to come back and play some pickup with the current guys on the team. Wow. And he was out here killing.
Hey, Brendan.
Late 30s, ain't picked up a ball in 2 years, giving everybody the blues.
Hey, Brendan, it sounded like to me, like you say, you bleed that Carolina blue. And this might be a kind of a different question for you, but what about Bill Belichick showing up there for your athletic program?
Yeah, I'm interested to see how that's going to work. You know, I don't know Bill Belichick obviously personally.
Sure.
But, you know, recruiting is so much about nowadays the NIL. But then, you know, relating to the younger guys and the younger generation and some of the best coaches, you know, they can go out there and have a conversation about what's going on in the hip-hop world. Like, hey, what's going on? They can talk to you about what's going on with Drake and Kendrick Lamar and relate to the guys in the locker room. By all accounts, Bill ain't that guy. So I want to – it's going to be interesting to see how that meshes. I'm glad that he's there. The Carolina fan base is really rallying behind him. And I know one thing. They're going to be one of the most prepared teams in college basketball. But I want to see how he's going to handle the other stuff. Like, yeah. You know, the phone calls in the middle of the night because player X, Y, and Z was somewhere where he wasn't supposed to be.
Yeah.
Because it's different in the NFL. It's grown men as opposed to the – in college, you got to manage these young guys.
How about the impressive flexibility in those weekend photos we saw him on the beach with his young girlfriend?
Hey, man, I ain't touching that. Y'all ain't going to get me in trouble. I'm leaving that one off. Hey, Bill, hey, listen, Bill, do your thing, baby. Bill, do your thing. I'm going to leave that one alone.
Hey, we hear some crazy stories about Shaquille O'Neal and the way he used to treat some of his teammates by way of pranking them. Seemed like he crossed the line in a big way. Are you familiar with some of these stories? Who was the biggest prankster? Were you a prankster? I'm blown away at some of these Shaq stories.
Yeah, I've heard some of them because obviously I played with Tyronn Lue, so I heard about, like, Shaq, you know, maybe taking a boo-boo in somebody's shoe and they put the shoe on and these type of things. I'm trying to think, probably the biggest prankster I played with was Gilbert Arenas. He would prank some of our young guys. I think the best prank that I saw him pull was we had a guy by the name of Avi Story. He only played in the league for a couple of years, but him and Gilbert were friends, and he pranked him by having somebody in the middle of practice come in and take the wheels off his car, and then he sent him on a treasure hunt around the building to find where the wheels were placed.
A classic. That's a good prank right there. Shaq was crossing the line, right? I mean, you don't do the booty mouthpiece and give it to your teammate.
I mean, you do if you don't feel that they can beat you up. I mean, that's just what it comes down to. But what you going to do with Shaq? It's like, you just got to deal with it.
Ultimate trump card. Brendan, amazing stuff as always. You're the best. Good luck to your heels in the tournament. We look forward to chatting hoop with you again soon.
I appreciate it.
There he goes. Brendan Haywood there with you on the fan.
Boo-boo shoe is hilarious.
That man said boo-boo. Oh, yeah, Shaq took a boo-boo. A boo-boo. He's 45 years old talking about boo-boo.
Brendan Haywood brought to you by Bet Online.
Respectfully.
Yeah, I didn't know that as a player. He was so hilarious. You know, guy had jokes the entire time. You know, just go warm up to him a little bit more, I guess.
I guess so.
No, but he's doing a great job there with Bet Online and all his different broadcast responsibilities. So thanks to him. And it'll be really interesting to track that UNC storyline. Can they make a run and sort of silence the critics? Like, I think they were like 1-12 against the quad one teams this year.
Yeah, Brian. they had some losses, though, against some really, really good teams, though.
Yeah.
But what's happened, too, if you kind of track this, these play-in teams,
mm-hmm.
find a way to win a couple of games along the way. So, you know, keep an eye on whoever those play-in teams are. They seem to just, you know, the desperation of having to play seems to kind of buoy them into winning some other games. So it's happened every year. North Carolina might be that team.
The Cowboys have lost Zach Martin, Tank, Jordan Lewis, a few other players, and they have brought in a whole mess of other guys to try to replace them. Have they actually made themselves better? Somebody has measured that. We'll get you their report and more coming up next here in the C-Note. It's the G-Bag Nation here on the Fan. Yeah, buddy, we got Cowboys news here for you, and we'll try to answer the question, have the Cowboys actually made themselves better with all this activity in free agency over the last week? But there's some Rangers breaking news. A segment's brought to you by the Frankels. If you've been injured in a car, truck, wreck, call the Frankels first, 214 or 817-333-3333. There's never an out-of-pocket cost. They only get paid when you win. Franklin Frankel, the go-to car and truck wreck attorneys in Dallas. It's also brought to you by Cars for Kids. Donate today, carsforkids.org. We have a new pitcher, left-handed starter Patrick Corbin. He's not what you would call good, or at least he hasn't been since 2019. But he's kept going and started 32 games last year. had an ERA above 1.5. Let's just say that. And it's been that way for the last 4.5 years. WHIP over 1.5. That's walks and hits per innings pitched. His ERA has been significantly higher, obviously, in the fives and sixes here of recent seasons. I don't think he's good, but you just didn't have a lot of money under that luxury tax apron to spend. So you had to find somebody who could be a credible starter. That way you don't have to plug two of these spots with a young guy or your long reliever.
Yeah, at this point, this is just a desperation move with the status of the rotation. You really have no lefties, so this guy at least brings you a lefty arm that, like you said, has the stamina to eat plenty of innings.
Yeah.
But it's not going to be very pretty.
Yeah, yeah. Expect a lot of base runners. Like, I'm surprised his ERA isn't significantly higher. He must have a knack for pitching his way out of trouble because he lets a lot of guys on. Like, every inning, over 1.5 base runners every time the inning starts. And 2 years ago was 1.7. He flipped and started 31 games like that, Brian, and actually threw one complete game in 2022. So, Rangers got a guy here in Patrick Corbin. I would imagine they want to have Jack Leiter as essentially their fifth starter and maybe, Corbin and him there at the back of the rotation. I just don't think you could have any faith that you should be putting Kamar Rocker out there right now, especially since he's going to be on an innings watch. Like, now's the perfect time for be like, okay, Rocker, we're going to work on you in the minors or maybe extended spring training here for a while.
Agreed. I think that's got to be the plan. And Jared Sandler just tweeted out a John Gray update. The Rangers received good news from a wrist specialist. No surgery or plates needed. The Rangers hope that John Gray will be back sometime in June. Their initial fear was post-trade deadline.
Okay, that's great.
That is good news.
First good news we've gotten on that front in a little bit. But that'll work.
What happened to Rocker?
Yeah, I don't know.
Just a little speed bump.
Yeah.
Just a little speed bump. Hopefully. Hopefully he doesn't have the yips of some kind. I think they'll get it figured out with Mad Dog and see why the mechanical beast that they are. They'll get him squared away. But I'm with you, Dawson. I don't think right now you want to be throwing him into the major league fire.
I kind of felt like that if the guy that was going to have the problems, it'd be the other guy.
Yeah.
That's the craziness about sports and just, aspect of being a young pitcher.
Yeah. If you went into the season or went into spring training, you would think the guy that's going to struggle is Jack Leiter.
For sure.
Maybe with his confidence and things like that.
His ERA was 9.5 last year.
And then Rocker, you're kind of feeling like, okay, this guy's built for this.
I think it's just that, Leiter was probably hungry all offseason to get it figured out for the first time. And last summer, Rocker got it figured out. But for a young guy, you know how it can be. How do you be consistent, right? So he had to build to that over 3 months of minor league baseball. And then he got to that point. Can you put it back together now in 2 to 4 weeks? At least for at this point in Kamar Rocker's career, the answer to that question is no. But I'm totally confident that he'll be there by June, Brian. So
yeah.
Let's just let him take it easy here in the spring. Okay, the Cowboys actually better. I've been wondering that. Have you been wondering that? I have. Pro Football Focus released their post-free agency power rankings. And this is interesting because you lost like 8 players. You add like 12 players. And that's more complicated than a human brain. I know Pro Football Focus's system isn't perfect, but it's the closest thing we have. And they say actually no. They've become a bottom 10 team now, slightly worse than last year's 7-10 bunch. Mm. Does that surprise you?
I felt like there's a couple of spots. I don't think the running back spot is very good. I don't think the guard spot's very good, what they did. Everything else, I feel like it's kind of a wash.
They're probably worse at corner.
Definitely worse at corner.
Yeah, that's to me, well, like I said, it depends on how they play the corner. If you get Elam and he does it, if they play him in zone, they're worse at corner.
But losing Jordan Lewis at this point, I mean, they obviously still have the draft to get that remedied, but the absence of Jordan Lewis is pretty glaring at the moment.
Oh, no, they could address it through the draft.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I just feel like if you tell me the free agents that they got, I kind of feel like that they're not very – that we'll see what happens at guard. I don't think that's an upgrade there from what you have. And like I said, I don't think the running back situation. What bothers me so much is this is a team that all they did was talk about running the ball, made a commitment to go get coaches that run the ball, have ways to run the ball, and they go out and they just completely, to me, in free agency, you could have re-signed your guy. You could have re-signed Rico Dowdle and then drafted somebody and probably been a lot better off. But they're not. They
really screwed this up.
I think that I could say they talk about that. They talk about running and the coaches and to me they haven't helped. I think they made themselves worse.
But if they draft a running back that you like, would that solve it?
I was to the point where I would have not spent the money on either one of those backs. And I would have drafted, I would just double dip that running back room.
Yeah.
I've got 25 guys that I've looked at. All 25 guys I would draft.
I do think there's an upgrade when you're thinking about the general pass rush, because you've lost DeMarcus Lawrence, but you bring in Dante Fowler. He's a better pass rusher. And then the three technique, you bring back Osa, and then you bring in Solomon Thomas behind him. Yeah. That's better than what it was. Those are really the only two areas where you can say confidently.
Like I say, with Golston, to me, it was always like, is he a tackle? Is he an end? I think they wasted a lot of his time as a player. And then, they've kind of played him at one spot. But I'm okay with Turner playing as an edge and playing the run. If he's going to play the Golston role, doing it that way, sure. I think that's, like I say, I just feel like that the bad spots with a running back and the guard, were the ones I questioned the most.
Yeah, and it's just a matter of have their losses been bigger than the adds that they've done, and I don't know. I think it's close to a wash. But what about the other part of Pro Football Focus's article here that they're now a bottom 10 team in the league? I don't know if they're that bad. I think that might be overreacting.
If they would have not signed anybody or traded for anybody, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. If they just let all their depth walk out the door and Jordan Lewis and say they didn't get Osa done. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, right now you've upgraded your pass rush a little bit. It's not like 10 times better, but you've upgraded it, I think, a little bit with the Fowler stuff.
Fowler's a better pass rusher than Tank.
But your run defense has not gotten any better. Golston and DeMarcus Lawrence were two guys.
You've added a couple of linebackers that were leading tacklers on their teams, right?
Yeah, but you saw that Eric Kendricks was a tackling machine. It doesn't mean that you have a good run defense. You still need a one tech to help that issue.
Yeah,
and then your corners right now are poor. So your pass defense and your run defense haven't gotten any better. If this draft isn't awesome, I think there is a world where you're talking about this being a bottom feeder type team.
Yeah, they're gonna have to get some help, but I just think especially in the analytics world, they're using the per play efficiencies from last year. And last year you had some weird things going on where you're learning a new defense, you're trying to give Zeke the ball for half the season. You have a rookie left tackle, and I just don't know that whatever they put inside the computer or on film in the first half of last year is really that representative of who they are as a football team.
Yeah, they are going to be learning a new defense again, and now you're learning a new offense. We think this is a better offense, and we're glad that they're doing it, but what type of learning curve is there going to be like the defense last year? And now you're having that on both sides of the ball.
Sure.
Dak off an injury, and your wide receivers, you haven't gotten better at wide receiver either.
Not yet.
So it's you got to get better at running back, wide receiver, corner, and a run-stopping defensive tackle to even feel like you have a chance. You need four guys that can contribute in this draft day one.
Sound like all possibilities at 12.
Yeah, and their first four picks. Just give me those positions off the board in whatever order it makes sense. Mashota has three free agents who could still help. Wide receiver Keenan Allen is out there, 32 years old, had 750 yards in 15 games last year. I like the idea of drafting a guy, but having Keenan Allen could definitely help right now. Asante Samuel Jr. is 25 years old now, has not been amazing, smaller guy, but he would make the Cowboys cornerbacks as a group a little bit better. Wants a 4-year deal, though. I don't know if that's realistic. Calais Campbell, at flipping 39 years old, was the highest graded interior run defender in the league last year at Pro Football Focus. Still getting it done.
That's easy money right there. That should be a no-brainer. That is not a dude that's coming expensive. He's just kind of an NFL Iron Man as a run defender, still getting it done in a big way. Keenan Allen would be an absolute upgrade. I think Tevin Jenkins is still available on the offensive line. If you want to throw a dart there, don't expect them to. But yeah, there are a couple more veteran dudes outside. I don't think the Asante Samuel one would be. That dude's just always banged up. Shoulders, concussions, and he's tiny.
Speaking of easy money, Chief, you mentioned it perked me up a little bit, because coming up at 4:40, Rangers things you can gamble on. Okay, they got player props. There's three of them, massive mistakes on Vegas. We can clean them out for entertainment purposes only, not financial advice, but that's coming up at 4:40. We're gonna clean out the casinos here on these player props for the Rangers. Okay, Krusty's Corner's coming up next, though. Brian, where are you taking us?
Yeah, let me give you the worst first-round fits for all these NFL teams. We'll do that next.
Thank you very much, Lucius. It's the G-Bank Nation here on The Fan. Krusty's Corner is brought to you by Reliant Air Conditioning, gimmick-free AC repair and replacement. Here's the king, Brian.
Thank you very much, Joe, and thank you very much to Reliant for their continued support here. Eric and I had a Love of the Star off this morning.
It's an Odyssey podcast.
So, yeah, after our show today, if you want to give it a listen, we'd sure appreciate that.
Yeah, you can hear Brian jump on me about the running backs once again. Just a tale as old as time.
I didn't jump on you about it, did I? Did you feel like I attacked you?
No,
on
no, not at all. I'm just trying to hype up the episode.
Oh, I'm sorry. I should have played along with it then.
Broadus was screaming at me, and he was doing that index finger in my face thing.
I stood up and started pointing at you.
Yeah. We're getting running backs at 12 not named Genty in these mock drafts. And that, I mean, doesn't that take you off a little bit?
Yeah,
it should.
Yeah.
Yeah. The thing about it is, though, to me, I'm just saying with the Cowboys, and we had Love of the Star this morning, also had the draft show we did this morning. And the discussion that we had was about, you know, that with these, you know, it's like these players that, and I guess I'm taking it way too personal when they start to talk about, and they don't care what, I've said this a bunch, they don't care what I think. But I mean, the work you put into it, and they're starting to talk. They really like Mykel Williams, the edge from.
They like a bunch of guys you don't.
Yeah, and it kind of.
It's annoying. It's frustrating.
It's frustrating to the point where you're like, these guys are talking about the Mykel Williams and the Will Johnsons and guys like that. He's a Michigan corner, and Mykel Williams is the edge from Georgia. It's like they're good players, but they're not great players. And that's, you know, there's things about him. And the question was asked this morning as well. And Doss, I think I asked you the question, would you rather have a player with a high floor or a high ceiling?
Now at 12, I want a player with a high floor. Don't want to miss. Some years where your team is loaded, high ceiling can make more sense, but they have so many misses right now. Like Zach Martin was a high floor player. You know, that's the way I look at that. I don't feel like I'm sacrificing the possibility of having a really good player still. I'm just removing the boom or bust factor that so many teams, I feel like, embrace unnecessarily in the first round.
Yeah, I mean, in a perfect world, you want the highest ceiling dude. I mean, I think that's what you want to go for. Now, you do sometimes leave yourself open to the bust factor, but I think I can get a lot of high floor players throughout the draft. You know, I can, just because I bust on my first round pick, that's a lottery ticket to where I'm hoping I'm drafting a guy that is going to be one of the best at his position over the course of his rookie contract, and I'm paying pennies on the dollar because of it.
Yeah.
And I can go get higher floor players throughout the draft. So that's, but I understand for a team who's busted on their last two first round picks.
That's what I'm saying. Does Dallas's mindset need to be at 12 more of the high floor player and then take the opportunity to try and add high ceiling players in the second and third round and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a fair philosophy to have, I guess, at this point with the last two first round picks not really hitting the way you want to, and you just want to get a guy that you can plug and play and at least know he's a starter for you for the next 5 years, and there's something comforting in that. But I mean, I tend to want to get a little bit greedy in the first round pick. I'm swinging for the fences and really at premium positions. That's what I want to do, because I want to have a corner who people talk about, like Pat Surtain, best in the sport, borderline day one, and they've had him on the cheap for the first 4 years of his deal. That's where you hack the system. You've taken a premium position player, one of the best at his position, and now you're not paying much for it. You take a running back at 12, he's immediately one of the highest paid running backs in the league.
Yeah, to me, though, this is where I I have the problem, and you and I had this discussion, that I don't want to hear about that. I don't want to hear about positional value. And this is where I was coming from when you and I were talking. I don't want to hear about positional value for the Cowboys not taking a running back at 12 and then busting on some other pick. When the running back is likely to be the best player, or like long term the best player. Mm-hmm. If I'm with you, I'll go with you all day if you tell me like, okay, sure, we don't have to take a running back. We don't have to take one. Even though this guy is, if you look at, there's probably 4 or 5 players, you know, that I look at that I don't think are going to bust.
At 12.
And I'm in that mode right now, Bo. If you take somebody else other than one of those guys, or say the running back is there and you don't take him because you have this positional value thing.
You pass on Jeanty.
You pass on Jeanty to take somebody else that busts. I don't want to hear that anymore. I don't want to hear about positional value when you pick 3 straight years of potentially bust players.
I think all things need to be equal. You know, when you're talking about positional value, it can't be this running back versus this edge, and oh, by the way, this edge just had ACL surgery, or this corner's arms are short, or he didn't run his 40 time. Then, I mean, say what you want about the grade on film and everything. Like, I have a sure thing at running back. I think that needs to be worth a lot more than this edge or wide receiver is coming off an injury or has a major hole in the valuation. And I think this year might be that situation.
I do think, though, sometimes you go high floor. Wasn't Mozzie Smith's just sort of high floor? Hey, this is going to be flashy, but this is a guy that we think can plug and play and help stop the run for the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. And you missed on that. So the whole thing is like just identifying a guy as being this or that is kind of a fool's errand as well.
Yeah, it's all probabilities. Like, what are we trading off here for?
Yeah, you know? and you pass on the running back at 12, but don't you have 4 guys right now that are not running backs, Broadus, that you feel like are low bust potential?
And I don't think they like any of these guys that I'm talking about. Because I would pick me personally, and the last one that I have, because I've really got 5, but Jeff Kavanaugh asked me the question about at 12 of guys. And I listed Simmons, the tackle from Ohio State, number 1. Jeanty from Boise, number 2. Barron, the corner from Texas, number 3. And I'm kind of struck. I think Ibuka, even though I have McMillan over him, there's something about, and just call Ibuka a gut for me.
He's a safe pick.
Just a gut. That he has played in big games. He's played the role of the 2. He's got 1 potential. He's used to that.
There's a lot to like about him.
A lot to like about him.
Blocks in the run game.
Exactly. And that's why I've got him, like him and McMillan. But here we are talking about the potential of maybe some high ceiling guys or something like that. You know? That's where I'm If it's Mykel Williams or Will Johnson,
more of a projection.
Yeah. See, to me, give me Simmons, give me Jeanty, give me Barron, give me McMillan, give me Ibuka, give me those guys.
Right.
Those are the guys that my gut right now says. If you said, hey Brian, pick me the guy that you think. Give me somebody out of that group.
So you're hearing the players that they do like. And they're not lining up with the players you feel like are high floors.
No, and that's what I'm saying. And I think there's a lot of, and listen, they're going to take whoever they want, but they don't like Barron for a particular reason. And they don't like Jeanty for a particular reason. And they wouldn't take Simmons for particular reasons. I mean, I wouldn't surprise if they have Will Campbell, the LSU tackle, over Simmons. I'm just saying for my evaluation and like others, this could be a very frustrating draft for me watching the Cowboys. If one of those 5 guys I mentioned on that board and they take somebody that I think might be a high ceiling player, you know, and it, because if it turns into a bust, then I'm going to be like, you know what? I don't want to hear from it anymore.
Did you say that you don't think they're as high on Genty as the rest of the
I don't think
universe?
They are. I don't think they are. And I think they're not high on him. I don't think they're high. I think they're having to convince each other that they're high. I think there's some things that Will McClay is doing to try and test where they're really at with Genty.
Well, let's be honest. Their process or their picking, their decisions have been in a way the last couple of years. Well, now you can't have confidence as a fan that they're going to do the right thing.
See, that's what I'm kind of like.
Yeah. I don't know if they're a good drafting team still.
That's
a big year.
Yeah, they can't afford. I don't think they can afford to take a high ceiling player. That's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they almost you have to at least get through that. You know, get through if it's Will Campbell over Simmons. I get it. It's they're right. The tags are right there.
So you're saying, hey, we're fine at 12 taking a starter for the next 5 to 7 years. He may not be an All Pro, but we know he's a starter.
I think Gavin brought up a great point when you start to talk about Zach Martin. That type of, you know, you start to talk about a player that when he came out of Notre Dame, he was like a ready-made guy, and it worked out great for you. I think you need to be in that drafting mode like that. That's kind of where my mindset is right now.
I mean, there's not as high of a chance that he could be great, but there's virtually no chance that you're going to bust.
Yeah.
And
with Martin, you got the jackpot because he ended up being great.
Yeah. I mean, he'd be a top five pick if people really knew how awesome he was going to be.
It wasn't clear. All right, real quick, though, too. We talked about Pro Football Focus, and this is for the Dallas Cowboys. This is the worst first-round fit, and this is where sometimes Pro Football Focus loses me because the reason they said is they said that Will Johnson, the corner, would be a bad fit for them, but they're not saying a bad fit as a player. They're saying that the Cowboys are well-stocked at cornerback.
Whoa.
With Diggs and Deron Bland locked into starters on the outside, if they were looking to replace Jordan Lewis in the slot, a more natural fit would be Jahdae Barron from Texas. Instead, Dallas needs to focus on improving their rushing offense and their run defense rather than further loading up in secondary. Are you agreeable on that?
Well, I mean, you'd have to play Deron Bland on the inside if you're going to take another corner eventually, but at midseason, I think they need to do it actually now that I think about it, just because it's probably going to be time to move on.
I would love for them to take Barron, by the way.
Oh, me too. Yeah.
Well, I was going to say that it's going to be time to move on from Diggs here pretty soon. The back-to-back seasons of massive injuries, if he doesn't come back and play great, I would look at moving on from him next March.
Yeah.
Yeah, but to act like Diggs is healthy right now is funny.
Yeah.
Like, how much of Diggs are we even going to see next season is a real question.
I think Dallas has a need at corner.
Or nickel.
That's why, I think that's why you need to look at every one of these corners in the first two rounds need to be in consideration for the Dallas Cowboys. I really, really do.
Well, let's talk more draft, Brian. Thank you for Krusty's
Corner. Thank
you,
man. Appreciate that.
NFL Draft Big Board Report. What the last 20 years say about your chances of success if you decide to trade up for a quarterback. That's interesting. And the top 10's coming up there after that. It's all in hour 3 of the Nation. Next, the Fan.